What if everything you believed about freedom was backward? Consider this. You wake up each day making countless free choices, what to eat, where to work, how to live, yet somehow feel increasingly trapped by forces beyond your control. Laws you never voted for govern your behavior. Economic systems you didn't design determine your opportunities. Political leaders you barely recognize make decisions affecting your life. How did we arrive at this strange condition where freedom and bondage coexist so intimately? This paradox haunted Jean-Jacques Rousseau in 1762, and it haunts us still. His opening salvo cuts through centuries. Man is born free, yet everywhere he lived in chains. But here's the twist. Rousseau wasn't lamenting this condition. He was diagnosing it to find a cure. Unlike philosophers who justified authority through divine right or natural hierarchy, Rousseau asked a more radical question. Could political authority ever be legitimate? His answer would reshape democracy itself, transforming how we understand the relationship between individual liberty and collective power. Force alone creates nothing legitimate. Every tyrant possessed overwhelming power, yet none could rule by strength alone. Even brutal dictatorships require myths, institutions, and legitimacy to maintain control. Raw power compels obedience, but never creates genuine obligation. If might makes right, then right simply means whatever the strongest can enforce, a concept that dissolves when someone stronger appears. Traditional justifications for authority crumble under scrutiny. Some argued people naturally submit to kings, but this describes cowardice, not legitimacy. Others suggested conquered peoples implicitly consent to their rulers, but submission under threat isn't consent, it's survival. Even the idea that people collectively surrender freedom to a monarch begs the question, what made them a people capable of collective action in the first place? The real question cuts deeper. What could transform isolated individuals into a unified political community without sacrificing their freedom? True political legitimacy must emerge from a radically different arrangement, one where individuals remain free precisely by binding themselves to something greater than any individual will. Rousseau's social contract presents a paradox. Surrender everything, yet lose nothing. Each person gives their natural rights completely to the community, but since everyone surrenders equally to the collective rather than to any individual, nobody gains power over anyone else. You give yourself to everyone, which means you give yourself to no one. This creates a moral collective body where members are simultaneously rulers and subjects. As a citizen, you create laws. As a subject, you obey them. You're following rules you helped create, the highest form of freedom. Modern democracies embody this principle. When you vote, you exercise citizenship. When you follow laws, even ones you opposed, you act as a subject. This isn't submission because you participated in the process. This transforms human nature. Natural liberty, doing whatever you have strength to accomplish, gives way to civil liberty, obedience to self-prescribed law. In 1762's monarchical Europe, this was revolutionary. By locating sovereignty exclusively in the collective body of citizens, Rousseau provided intellectual ammunition for the revolutions that would transform Western politics. Against kings claiming divine right, he insisted only the people possess legitimate authority. The general will isn't what most people want. It's what we collectively recognize as genuinely good for everyone. When neighbors vote on building a park based on personal convenience, that's the will of all. But when they ask, what serves our community's long-term flourishing, that approaches the general will. The general will always aims at common advantage, but we often misjudge what serves it. We're not corrupted. We're deceived by wrong facts, propaganda, or unforeseen consequences. This explains how democracies make terrible decisions while citizens genuinely seek the common good. Factionalism threatens this process most. Powerful groups pursue narrow agendas while claiming broader representation. Agricultural interests invoke feeding America while seeking corporate subsidies. Financial industries cite economic growth while pursuing deregulation. Rousseau's remedy: either prevent factions entirely or encourage so many that none dominate. Forced to be free doesn't justify totalitarianism. It means compelling citizens to consider common good over self-interest. The general will emerges through deliberation, not ruler imposition. This describes democracy's essential discipline, setting aside what merely benefits you to consider what benefits everyone. Sovereignty, the ultimate political authority, resides exclusively with the people and cannot be transferred, divided, or represented. When you elect representatives who make decisions independently, you've surrendered your sovereign power. For Rousseau, this isn't democracy, it's elected aristocracy. His critique of English democracy remains piercing. The English people believes itself free. It is greatly mistaken. It is free only during parliamentary elections. As soon as representatives are elected, the people is enslaved. It is nothing. Periodic voting doesn't constitute genuine sovereignty. Direct, continuous participation does. Rousseau distinguished between sovereignty, the people's legislative power, and government, the executive function implementing laws. The former belongs exclusively to citizens. The latter requires specialized institutions. Laws must be general, applying universally, rather than targeting specific individuals. This radical vision influenced democratic movements worldwide. The American Declaration of Independence echoes Rousseau. Governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Contemporary participatory democracy movements still draw inspiration from his insistence that sovereignty belongs directly to people, not their representatives. While sovereignty resides with the people, executive power requires a separate entity, government, to implement laws and maintain order. Government serves as the intermediary between sovereign people and individual citizens, wielding delegated power that the sovereign can modify or reclaim. Rousseau identifies three primary forms: democracy, where most citizens serve as magistrates; aristocracy, where a few govern; and monarchy, where one person governs. Democracy demands nearly impossible requirements. Citizens must know one another, customs must remain simple, and equality must prevail. If there were a people of gods, they would govern themselves democratically, Rousseau writes. So perfect a government is not suited to men. Elective aristocracy, choosing wise, experienced leaders, offers practical advantages but requires moderation from the rich and contentment from the poor, conditions rarely sustained. Monarchy concentrates executive power efficiently but risks corruption as the monarch's particular will opposes the general will. Modern democracies incorporate elements of all three types: elective representatives, executive leadership, and popular sovereignty. Rousseau's warning that government naturally works against sovereignty anticipates contemporary concerns about bureaucratic power and democratic accountability. All political bodies eventually decay. Even Sparta and Rome fell. While no government lasts forever, understanding degeneration patterns helps design systems that extend a state's lifespan. Government naturally contracts as public virtue declines and power concentrates in fewer hands. To counter this, Rousseau proposes regular sovereign assemblies that governmental authority cannot cancel. These gatherings address whether to preserve the current government form and maintain existing officials, serving as democratic renewal moments where citizens directly exercise sovereign power. Rousseau rejects political representation. Sovereignty cannot be represented for the same reason it cannot be alienated. When citizens prefer paying taxes to personal civic service, democracy's foundations weaken. As soon as public service ceases to be the chief business of citizens and they would rather serve with their money than with their persons, the state is not far from its fall. Digital technology offers possibilities: online forums, participatory budgeting, direct digital democracy that could revitalize sovereign power. Yet these innovations must promote genuine participation rather than merely simulating it. Rousseau's vision demands more than periodic voting. It requires ongoing engagement and willingness to prioritize collective flourishing over self-interest. Legitimate authority emerges only from continuous participation in shaping our laws. Your freedom depends not on being left alone, but on actively participating in collective self-governance. The chains Rousseau identified aren't imposed from outside. They're forged by political passivity. Breaking them requires reclaiming the sovereign power that was always ours.